So I'll be presenting our paper, Italian for Beginners, The Next Steps for SLO-Based Management. And this is joint work with Lakshmi, Vipul, Kaladar, and Steve. So we need service automation, and we need service automation because systems and applications are complex. And to handle this complexity, we are provisioning them from peak demand and underutilizing them during normal conditions. We also have low management efficiency because one administrator can't manage all the machines that are running within one data center. And research has shown that our service automation can help, but we've done a very poor job in getting them into products. And in this talk, I'm going to show some directions that we can follow in order to fix this problem. So we need service automation because we see four main trends in the data center today. And these four main trends are sharing, scale, complexity, and dynamism. So the first trend is sharing, where data centers are moving from a silo to a shared world. So in a traditional data centers, resources used to be provisioned in silos, where you may provision fast fiber channel or SSD drives for a high-priority database application and slower SATA drives for low-priority applications. And each of these silos were provisioned for peak demand, and so they were underutilized most of the time. So to improve resource utilization, newer data centers are moving towards a shared model where the same system is provisioned for both high-priority and low-priority applications. The second trend is complexity, where newer storage systems have a multitude of features, from hybrid shelves that combine both SSDs and hard drives together, to different RAID levels, to compression, dedupe, and replication. And with all of these knobs, it's very difficult for the administrator to understand the impact of combining these different technologies. For example, the administrator may not know the impact on performance if he turns on deduplication. The third trend is that there is a huge increase in scale, where data centers that used to be in the ones and tens of machines are quickly moving towards hundreds and thousands of machines. Combining this increase in scale with the complexity of today's systems requires us to have a large number of administrators just to manage one data center. And finally, the fourth trend is that applications are dynamic. So applications come in and go from the data center, and even those applications that have been running for a really long time have changes in demand, where they go from normal load to peak load. And these sudden changes create hotspots within the data center. And so we need to handle all of the sudden changes in resource requirements that happen within the data center as well. So what happens in industry? How are data centers handling all of these trends that we see? So basically, data centers are provisioning for peak demand. Basically, they don't want to deal with the dynamism that exists, and so they'll provision for the peak capacity because that makes it easier. Second, they're not using all the features that are available within today's systems. For example, if the administrator does not understand the impact of performance because of deduplication, he may not turn on deduplication at all. And while this reduces storage efficiency, it still makes the administrator's job a lot more easier. And finally, data centers are using a lot of administrators just to manage all of the resources that exist within a data center. So basically, the takeaway is that data centers are spending more just to handle all of these four trends. A better solution is to use automated management with service-level objectives. And SLOs are a specification of applications requirements in technology-independent terms. Basically, SLOs describe what the application needs are at many different levels of the software stack. And they describe it along many different attributes, such as performance, where the application may specify what kind of I/O latency it wants or what type of IOPS it wants at the storage level, and what type of transactions per second it wants at the database level. It also describes its capacity requirements in terms of how many gigabytes of storage that it wants, in terms of reliability and availability, and these would be in terms of recovery point objective and recovery time objective. Also, it may specify security and compliance that the application wants. For example, does the application want its data to be encrypted on disk, and whether actions taken on that data should be logged for auditing purposes? So now, given SLOs, we can enable service automation using the MAPE loop. And the MAPE loop consists of four steps. First, we monitor and we see whether the application is meeting its required service level objectives. And if not, we analyze and try to understand what might be the problem, plan the corrective solution to fix the problem, and execute and take these corrective actions so that we bring back the application back up to its service level objective. And once we do that, we can go back to monitoring the service levels again. And research has looked at how to do SLO-based management using many works, and we compared all the research work that we found to what we see in products today. And we compared them along multiple dimensions in terms of SLO specification, how SLOs are monitored and reported, and whether these systems can do impact analysis, and what are the different techniques that they have to handle SLO violations. And what we find is that products are lacking SLO-based features. Most of the products use technology-dependent SLO attributes, and they also lack a notion of multidimensional SLO specification. For example, many products allow you to specify SLOs in terms of performance or protection, but never both of them together as a single atomic unit. And finally, there's a lack of impact analysis and automated planner in many of these products. And we thought about why SLOs have been slow to be adopted in products. And we looked at John Wilson's retrospective on the HP Labs work, and basically what John Wilson concluded was that we, in order for SLO-based management to be adopted, we need to convince administrators that the system can be trusted. Also, these systems need to be simple to use and be predictable in their performance. And finally, these systems need to be open about their decision-making process. And we agree with all of these conclusions, but we also find other reasons on why SLOs have been slow to be adopted in products. The first reason that we come up with is that it's very difficult to specify SLO requirements. We also find that in order to do accurate or good job at SLO-based management, we need to build good performance and reliability models. And also, the current techniques for correcting modeling errors have a very high cost. And I'll describe each of these in detail. The first reason is that SLOs are really hard to specify. And part of this might be because administrator may not know the precise requirements of an application. Second, the administrator needs to combine performance goals, protection goals, security, and cost in order to come up with the final SLO specification. And this is very difficult for an administrator to do all the time. And part of this is kind of validated by what has been implemented within products. And what we see is that simplicity wins. SLO-based features that have been implemented are things like bandwidth shares or specifying priorities for applications. And this is much easier for an administrator to grasp and implement within their data center. And second reason is modeling errors. Basically, with automated management, the software needs to have models, whether it be white box models or black box models, in order to predict and plan for SLO-based management. And building these models takes a lot of time because the model needs to capture the complexity that exists within these systems. And if it's a white box model, then some sort of designer has to go in, look at the code, and build these models. Or if it's a black box model, we have to run enough experiments to capture most of the data to come up with a detailed model. And perhaps one of the reasons why SLO-based management hasn't been adopted is that maybe up till now, human experts have been better at than a computer-based model. But we think that going forward, the complexity will increase so much that humans may not be able to model everything. And this is where hopefully computer models will kick in and SLO-based management will start to take effort. The third reason is that current products have a very high reconfiguration cost. Basically, if we make a prediction error in terms of provisioning or allocating resources, the kind of solution to take in order to fix that problem is either to buy a new storage system or migrate a data set from one set of hard drives to another set of hard drives. And these might be terabytes of data, so it takes a day or two just to move the data. So perhaps the third reason why SLOs haven't been adopted in product is that perhaps it's just simpler to provision for peak load at the moment. So using these observations, we come up with some directions on how to improve the adoption of SLO-based management in products. And what we focus on is that, or what we ask to focus on is to focus on the process rather than the product itself. Because getting SLOs implemented as part of regular products is more than just product development. We need to figure out ways on how to make SLO specification easier to specify by users. We also need to look at techniques for building and updating system models. And finally, from a vendor's point of view, we also need to look at how to do post-sale supports for products that have SLO-based management features enabled in them. And our idea of looking at this is through the notion of qualified SLOs. And what we mean by qualified SLOs is that we identify SLOs for popular applications, and we can get this by leveraging the expertise of our customers and products, and we can translate application requirements all the way down to the storage requirements. For example, let's say that many of your customers are running Microsoft Exchange with some number of mailboxes, and typically these Exchange servers are configured using best practices documents that's provided by Microsoft as an atomic unit. So the best practices are, say, how to configure your system so that you get the optimal performance and the optimal protection for a Microsoft Exchange server. So once we have this sort of a description, then we can build qualified SLOs for particular Exchange configurations for a given set of mailboxes. So to give this in a graphical view, let's assume that we're working in a world without qualified SLOs. So here, for an administrator, basically he gets a requirement saying he needs to implement corporate mail that has to be fast, highly reliable, and have user error protection. And what he sees from a storage is a bunch of storage features like RAID, snapshots, dedupe, compression, high availability, and so on. So the first thing that the administrator has to do is take this high-level requirement, that is, the service has to be fast and highly reliable, and figure out what does that really mean in terms of SLOs. So he may look at best practices documents and perhaps come up with this sort of a specification, saying that for this thing to be fast, latency should be 10 milliseconds, throughput should be 100 megs, and there's some RTO and RPO guarantees. And then he has to come up with the storage configuration in order to meet these goals. And this, we think, is very hard for every administrator to do. So our way of doing qualified SLOs is we're pretty much going bottom-up, where we're taking the storage features that we have, and we're building qualified SLOs for using them. So we might have a QSLO1, which says what kind of latency and throughput that we get for that. And we may have QSLO2, which specifies a different sort of goals. And now, in addition to all of these, we can also tag them by saying that QSLO1 is perhaps a good choice for mail servers, and QSLO2 is perhaps a good choice for some low-priority applications. So now when the administrator gets a request to saying that he needs to implement a fast, highly reliable corporate mail server, he simply has to do a match and figure out that QSLO1 is the best choice, and then so you just use that. So the second direction we propose to look at is looking at low-impact dynamic reconfiguration techniques. And these techniques basically look at how to migrate small amounts of data in order to meet SLOs. And some techniques include like dynamic storage layout, especially there was a work presented in FAST 11 that looked at dynamic tiering where data was moved between SSDs and hard drives. Even protocol changes such as PNFS allow you to kind of non-disruptively move the data without the user seeing any sort of changes. Finally, we can look at techniques for deploying caches in many places. So caches such as host-side caches that can be running on the server side and caches that can be running on the storage side. And both of these caches allow you to dynamically reconfigure your resources in order to meet certain performance goals. The third direction we propose to look at is community wisdom. And here, again, we're trying to leverage the notion of qualified SLOs for doing this. Basically, the idea is that if we know that customers are running qualified configurations, then we can compare those configurations across multiple deployments. So let's say that a bunch of our customers are using Exchange with qualified SLO1, and we notice that there are certain optimizations we can do within qualified SLO1 for Exchange servers, then we can share those improvements across multiple deployments and help all of the customers. And things like this would be to proactively advise customers, so we can alert on misconfigurations. We can also notify them of common faults and errors that we see in these deployments. And finally, we can guide the customers towards best practices. So, and to give you an example of how we can guide it, let's say that our kind of recommended configuration is QSLO1 for corporate mail, but then we see a new customer perhaps hand coding very similar requirements for a different corporate mail instance. So now we can go in and suggest to the user that he should probably think about switching to a qualified configuration and start using QSLO1. So one of the benefits of going to a qualified mode is that we understand that qualified mode better. So we can perhaps enable other things like deduplication without really impacting the performance of the application. Also, we can figure out whether one qualified configuration, how it interacts with another qualified configuration. And this really helps if you have a multi-tenant sort of infrastructure. So to conclude, we need SLO-based management because data centers are moving towards a shared infrastructure, and also there's a lot of storage features that make configuration complexity very hard, or increasing the configuration complexity. And combining this with the scale and dynamism that exists within this data center makes it very hard for one administrator to manage the entire data center. So we're looking at ways on how to incorporate SLO-based management in an easy-to-use way so that customers will adopt it and products will have all of these features built in. And to do this, we propose several steps. The first step is to develop the notion of qualified SLOs and also look at techniques for doing dynamic low-impact reconfiguration, and finally, using community wisdom to share these improvements across multiple deployments. So thank you, and that's the end of my talk. So if you have any questions, I can take them.
Hi, I'm Asar. I'm working with Permabit. So it sounds very nice to have a system that's more automatic and dynamic. One large challenge I see, though, is when you have to help somebody when their system isn't behaving, you have another level here of interaction and complexity. If my system isn't behaving and I call up support, their job in helping me and being able to communicate to me about how to find out how my system is behaving and what I should do seems lot more interesting for them.
So, was that a comment or a question? I didn't catch.
Well, have you considered that? And do
yes,
you have any thoughts?
Yes. So, one of the benefits of qualified SLOs is this notion of that we can support customers better, because now if a customer is using a qualified configuration, let's say that he's using an Exchange with 100 mailboxes. So, when he has a performance problem or he has a protection problem, he calls tech support and he basically says, I was running Exchange with this many mailboxes, and I'm seeing this sort of an error. So from a support team's point of view, this gives the support team much better context into what the customer was running and how we can fix the problem. If you look at it from a non-qualified sense, the customer will just call and say, look, I was running application X, and I saw this sort of performance. And for a support team, that's very hard to determine because he does not know even like how the storage system was configured, how the application was configured, and so on. So if we work with like a common qualified configuration that both the support team knows and what the customer knows, then it makes diagnosis much more easier.
Thank you.
Ajay Gulati, VMware. So at some point you mentioned that currently human beings are doing a better job than the automated solutions, and the complexity would grow so much that human beings won't be able to do a good job, and the automated solutions will. Mm-hmm. But it seems like based on last decade of research that even the current systems with less complexity have been really hard to model. So do you feel that with the more complicated systems in future, the automated solutions would be able to model them?
I think So to better answer it, right? So even today, there are some human experts who are really good at provisioning, let's say for one application. So one person might be an expert on how to provision databases on storage, or another expert might be really good at provisioning Exchange servers on storage. And I agree with you that even today, modeling these systems may be very hard. But kind of our claim, or what we think will happen in the future, is that humans may not be able to model these things at all. And in that sense, computer models may kind of bridge the gap. So they may not be perfect, but they may be better than humans.
I see. Okay. So you're saying the inaccuracy of the computer models would be tolerable because there is nothing else better than that?
Yeah, because, humans, after kind of a certain threshold, it may be just impossible to model by one person. And that's where maybe leveraging a lot of these community wisdom ideas, and by kind of reducing the configuration space by using qualifications and things like that, we think computer models can kind of bridge the gap and maybe as good as humans are today.
Okay.
Hopefully
Thanks.
Better.
So, yes. Hi, Rick Spillane from Stanford University. So I actually think that there's another exciting aspect of SLOs that I didn't see you touch upon, and that is that a lot of algorithms and data structures that you're using in storage are oftentimes pulled in many different directions in terms of what the user wants because they just don't know. Like, for instance, they have to choose between fragmentation or they have to choose between write throughput because, you know, a lot of these systems might be log structured or something along those lines. And if the user has a channel by which he can sort of send hints to the system, it actually could unlock some spaces in a lot of these different trade-off spaces that would allow a system that knows what the user is willing to tolerate. Like, for instance, I don't care about space consumption, just give me, you know, lots of throughput, or I care a lot about space and I don't need a lot of throughput. That's an opportunity for the system to optimize for that, where it wouldn't have been able to before. I guess it's just my comment.
No, it's a very valid comment, and we've been thinking along those lines as well. And a part of it, I hinted at the dynamic storage layout. So we can even do things if you specify what type of application it is and what kind of things you are interested in, we can pick the appropriate layout. So whether it be write optimized layout or something that's suited better for random reads and so on. So that's kind of the other benefit of going through this qualified mode, because you are giving us more information so we can organize and handle storage that's suited for you rather than suited for somebody else.
Irfan Ahmed, VMware. So your goal is actually very interesting, and I think a lot of people in this room have either thought about it or tried stuff like this before as far as your goal is concerned, right? But, you know, there's some problems here. For example, given a configuration, we don't know how to even figure out whether that configuration is satisfiable. Given a bunch of SLOs and a bunch of, you know, clients for each of those, how does it, I mean, admission control becomes really tricky. Are you proposing that those problems should be forgotten about and they'll be taken care of as part of performance debugging or something like that? Or, I mean, how do we deal with that aspect?
Yeah, and that's a valid point as well. So I think in some ways we're not trying to be overly ambitious, and part of this kind of reflects the thoughts of the panel when they were talking about production systems, right? So in research, you can kind of push things to the limit and try out experimental features, but in a product, we're trying to be less ambitious than that. So what we find is that most of current deployments are running at maybe perhaps 20% utilization. So what we're hoping for is that by providing a better structure along all of these configurations, we can move those customers from 20% to perhaps 50% or 60%. Utilization. And I agree with you in that some of these techniques would be very useful and should be looked at once you reach the 80% or 90% utilization, but we're trying to be less ambitious at the moment. We just want a structure in place so that we can go towards that in the future, but at this point we're just trying to focus on 50% utilization.
Yeah, but I'm not convinced because, you know, in storage, I mean, I like the work, okay? I'm not convinced about that particular argument, because if you look at storage systems, right, you're dealing with caches and you're dealing with multiple tiers. The difference between performance is often, you know, a cliff-like fall. And so, for example, for you to accept a workload into your system which has an SLO of, say, 10 to 20 milliseconds, it's not clear to me that you can ignore the cache models. And as soon as you go there, now you have to know intricate details about the workload and its working set size and things like that, and then you get out of control. So I feel like, what is your contribution in terms of an analysis that says, look, yeah, we can ignore those problems. Why can we ignore those problems?
Good point. So I think a better way to answer is that once we have these set of qualified SLOs, we are kind of, in our lab, we're going to kind of tune them and figure out what is the optimal cache layout in order to meet those goals using one particular configuration. And we will suggest that. So in terms of like falling off the cliff, that shouldn't happen because it's been properly configured for that. And of course, there might be cases where perhaps the application changed over time, and so the original qualification isn't valid. But then we would actually have to go back and look at it. It's like, oh, is he violating his SLO because of something incorrectly configured, or whether the application has sufficiently changed that perhaps we should think about moving him into a different category. So let's say that we configured his machine for exchange with 100 mailboxes, and perhaps that configuration is valid until you go to 500 mailboxes. But now the customer moved to 1,000 mailboxes, and so the original qualified configuration isn't valid anymore, and that's why you fell off the cliff. So at that time, we can say, oh, look, you have sufficiently moved away from the qualified case that you should go into a different qualified case, and then now we understand your workload better. So that's kind of our thoughts on this.
Very interesting discussion. Thanks. Let's thank the speaker again.